ended up in a successful criminal prosecution, but we're still out the money. And the piece of paper I handed out to you was my previous testimony of February 6th, which I subsequently submitted to Mr. Blackmer as evincing serious concerns with the things that Mr. Dozeno and Mr. Middaugh were doing. And these were dismissed summarily. Mr. Blackmer was always polite to me. Of course, the judge in this case also overturned Mr. Blackmer's judgment about the funds supposed to be given to Mr. Dozeno. So I'm sorry to have to make that recommendation, but I think Mr. Blackmer has done an immense amount of harm to the principle of public financing of elections. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
That's all who signed up.
Council discussion?
Well, I'll make a motion. I do truly appreciate the work that the Campaign Commission has done on this issue at our request. And I certainly want to lend my support to Auditor Blackmer. I think he has done a lot in sort of uncharted territory here. Voter-owned elections requires a lot of good judgment, and I think he's exercised that judgment throughout. So I have total, complete faith in our auditor. I think two different scenarios were presented, ranging roughly $100,000 to $150,000. As the initial report for voter-owned elections in 2004 stated, funding must be sufficient to allow candidates to get their message out to the public. The way I look at it, really, in an election cycle, in a runoff cycle that's going to be an election of 45 days, I believe the figure of $100,000 is sufficient to get their message out. I say that for two reasons. One is, I think we all know we're going to have low turnout. But secondly, the expected amount of voter outreach that is spent on radio or TV, those rates are going to be a real deal in July compared to what they are in a November election or any other regular cycle election. It's a supply and demand thing, and I can tell you when the supply is there, the demand is there, like it will be this November, the rates go through the roof. I would wager to say that you can buy as much media with $100,000 in this 45-day election cycle as $200,000 will get you in November. So I think that this is a fair number. I think it does allow the candidates to get their message out, and I think it is strikes a fair balance with non-participating candidates in terms of the hurdle they have to achieve of raising $100,000 in a short amount of time. Again, summertime, as Commissioner Leonard noted, everybody's gone. Even those people who are non-participating candidates will be counting on to answer the phones. They're also gone. So it'll be tough to raise $100,000 in 45 days, and especially since you need it really sooner than 45 days. So I think $100,000, and that's what I would move to make the amount for the runoff in July 15th.
Commissioner, your motion is to replace 150 with 100 wherever it appears in the ordinance?
Correct. That's my motion.
Question, does this also then change the other amount, the subsequent matching, if it exceeds the $100,000? Because here it says 150% of 100,000, well, that would be 100,000, and that would then make it, 150 as opposed to 225?
Yeah, I would go with that ratio, so I would change that number too.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second it for the purpose of discussion. I want some feedback from the experts on the assumptions conveyed by Commissioner Saltzman.
And I'm just for the record, I'm going to recuse myself from the vote. Some have argued that because of my position in the current race, they're worried that my vote reflects the politics. I don't think it does, but I understand the perception, so I'm going to recuse myself.
Call a vote.
Adams?
I'd like discussion.
We have some questions.
Excuse me.
So if I could have, I don't know who, in terms of the issue of advertising being less expensive in the summer, I see the sort of the other trade-off is voters harder to reach. So who did you all look at? Did you have a discussion around those issues?
That did come up as a issue, that it was cheaper for media during an off-season period because there was less demand for time on the radio and television. However, at least Liz Kaufman's view was that given that runoff period being as short as it was hard to schedule the radio and television buys in there too. And she had said, you know, a mail ballot because of the turnout was, or I mean, a mail campaign would be the way to go. So whether that plays out in terms of a decision around the money available is really kind of what the strategy is for what kind of a campaign to run.
Commissioner Saltzman, how did, I mean, I feel like I have to ask, how did you sort of decide from 150 to 100 as opposed to 150 to 130, 120, 110?
Well, I think I did rely somewhat on Liz Kaufman's recommendations as well.
Which specifically?
Which was, well, I think it was closer to the 100,000, if not the 100,000 as being the right amount. But I think, you know, just part of it's intuitive, too. I mean, from the very get-go on this issue, you know, I appreciate Commissioner Stan wanted the campaign commission to look at it. I thought the original proposal for 66,000 was too low, and, you know, from the very get-go, 100,000 struck me as intuitively the right number to be at.
So it's intuition.
I don't have a grease board that I can do a formula that tells you exactly how I got to that.
How does 100,000, what's your reaction or the reaction of the committee to 100,000, since we're making sausage here? I guess I should ask some of the other ingredient makers if some of the committee would come up and comment on it.
Leslie Hildula, it's, you know, this is why we spent 2 hours with the data all in front of us, is because we didn't want to do it just based upon tuition. And I understand that at some point tuition comes into play. But the data shows us that whether you do a mailing campaign, what we heard is that people tend to do a mailing-heavy campaign or a media-heavy campaign. And you look at past races, you can see that. Cost to mailing in the city, they're expensive as well as media. And you're right, Commissioner Saltzman, it is cheaper probably to buy media in the summer than in the fall. However, the cost of mailings are also going to be pretty much the same. And so that 100,000 never came up as a reasonable amount. It was always more 130 to 170. I mean, there are always outliers, right? People out there who say 200,000 isn't even enough. And then, of course, we had people saying 66,000 should be enough. So we sort of took the outliers and kind of go, let's not look at the outliers. Let's look at where the majority of the data, the majority of past races, the majority of opinions are, and that was within that range of more 130 to 170. And that's where we came up. At some point, you're right, you kind of use your judgment and say, all right, 150 feels good based upon all this data, some of which contradicts each other.
But Leslie, the, as I understood the discussion, you agreed with Liz Kaufman's methodology except for the voter turnout. And as I pointed out, her high-end voter turnout ends up being 38% for a July election. And so it's just hard to understand how you picked a number other than that, given her track record, her methodology. And you used elections to contradict that weren't analogous. They weren't in the middle of the summer. I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding the fairness of that.
The thing that sticks out to me is that, Liz Kaufman didn't attend, so she wasn't able to go through, you know, detailed deliberations on this. But the numbers that she looked at a much larger number of elections, and a number of the elections that she looked at didn't include a race for the city commission. So, you know, I believe there was a 64% turnout in one. I don't remember which race that was, but that was one of them that did include a city commissioner in a special election. So, you know, to my mind, it wasn't very relevant to be looking at issues where there was simply a ballot measure that might or might not be of interest to.
With all due respect, then, you're saying you substituted your judgment.
No, I'm not. It wasn't my judgment that I substituted. This was something that multiple members of the public and political consultants brought up in the meeting that was there.
But what I'm saying is, Liz Kaufman is the only name here that anybody recognizes because you have an anonymous source. And Liz Kaufman is widely known to be the best in the business. So she came up, based on her judgment, what the turnout was going to be, what the cost would be. She put in a 25% cushion, and it feels like you didn't like the amount, so you picked some other amount.
I think that what Liz Kaufman did is she did us a great service by giving us a very detailed formula of how she got to her final number. When we went into our meeting, there was broad consensus, I think, from everyone involved in politics, everyone that came to testify looked at that the turnout numbers specifically.
Yeah, but they'll all be advocates of the vote system.
I don't think that's the case. I don't know that to be the case.
Okay. I'd like to raise one more point to what Commissioner Saltzman brought up about the costs of running a special. And one of the gentlemen that testified repeatedly at our meetings from C&E Systems talked about the effect of giving participating candidates all their money up front and the ability to buy cheaper TV and media time because they had their money up front. And that would be an issue of fairness that needed to be dealt with. But so he brought that perspective. But additionally, the C&E person did bring up a reflection on all the budgets that he had seen in previous specials. And he brought up the numbers of what traditionally had been run for voter outreach in those situations and what was sort of needed in them.
Any election is an accounting firm.
Yeah, so he just brought up the numbers that have been run in the past.
You give them your money, and they give you a report of how much money you have.
Yeah, and I bet he would like even more money. But
I think what he's saying, Commissioner Leonard, is that he provided trends based on actual spending and actual campaigns. Mm-hmm. Is that
Kevin Neely provided trends and actual data from past races. In the last two meetings, he attended and provided us with this data. And that was just as influential because we weren't looking at some consultant's analysis of what she would do. We were actually looking at what campaigns did spend. And he had those records available. They're publicly available records, but because of they are who they are, it was easy for them to gather that data for us.
Anything else to add? Thanks.
Well, I just want to say I do think that's a good point that you raise, that Kevin raises. You know, if you get your $100,000 check on May 21st and you can buy media for the future, you're in a better position.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I when we sent this to the commission, I said I would give great weight to their recommendation if I felt it was if they took an open mind and approached the issue with an open mind and did a thorough job of outreach, and I think that they met that condition that I applied with them. It sounds like, though, that majority of people voting on this don't support that, so I would be willing to compromise somewhere between 100 and 150, but I think that 100,000 is too low. And since we have to come up with something we all agree to get to three votes, we get to see democracy in action here.
I think you referred to it as sausage making.
Yes. Well, they mentioned their low-end number was 130, so I think 130 is a reasonable compromise.
Well, I'm not going to vote, but does it mean I don't get to ask questions? Explain to me the methodology, and if you can explain to me the methodology, I'll be happy. I can explain to you the methodology of $100,268. But making sausage is fine if we're doing land use. It isn't fine if we're deciding who the citizens get to elect to represent them.
Well, the commissioner, before you get too down that track, the 100,000 is, you know, based on a certain assumption about turnout. 150 is based on a certain assumption about turnout. There is
from an anonymous source, Commissioner Adams.
Well, it sounds like they talked to more than just the anonymous source, and they did actually.
Where is that in the report?
Well, that was in the testimony today.
I'm looking at the report. We have a written document that the public has a right to rely on, and I'm asking you.
I'm taking the report and the testimony from the folks that were involved in the process and sort of coming up with my conclusions. That's why we have these hearings. So the 100,000 that Commissioner Saltzman proposed is based on intuition and listening to the facts. It sounds like there's clearly the commission had to make some judgments as well. So I'm just saying that we need to, I think that we need to get closer to the commission's recommendation, who've looked at this in great detail.
Commissioner Saltzman, do you wish to amend your?
Well, I think, you know, again, bearing in mind that if the non-participating candidate raises over 100,000, the participating candidate gets matching funds. I still think, and everything I said previously, 100,000 is about the right number. I guess, you know, in the interest of trying to strike at something that three of us can vote on, I'd be willing to go to 115,000. But I do think 130, 150 is too high.
That's fine.
Do you want the undercoat? That undercoat, if you have salt on the road,
yeah,
reserves a car. It's...
What are you talking about?
Well, it feels like we're buying a used car here.
Okay, so I amend my...
Well, the 100,000 is intuition. The 130 and above is based on a lot of judgment and
you want the extended
exploration.
Warranty. Extended warranty is.
And I'm trying to get
really
to something. I'm trying to get to something in between what the commission recommended and what council is comfortable with.
So I will amend my motion to 115,000, and the matching fund available would be 150% of that, whatever that is. If the seconder of that
is second, I agree.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hunter.
Well, I have to say, you folks are watching something similar to democracy in action, but I think it is closer to the sausage. I felt at the time that when Commissioner Leonard came up with his proposal that that would be something fair. I think that the current recommendation, I think, is high, but I think in order to move this through, I think it's important for people to remember, however, that this is just applied to this one particular election. So we have to resolve this issue for future special elections, because otherwise these very same things will occur. So I strongly recommend that the interim, that the Citizens Campaign Commission look very seriously at a formula that we can assume is both reasonable to the VOE candidate as well as to the non-VOE candidate. And with that, I vote aye. Pardon? Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Move to a second reading, excuse me. Please read the 10 a.m. time, sir.
Item 441, tentatively uphold appeal of Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association and overturn the hearing officer's decision to approve the application of Tuan Lu and Crom Mosen Associated Architects, applicant, and Holiday Park Plaza, Inc., property owner, to amend two previously approved subdivision with adjustment cases for property located at the northeast corner of Northeast 16th Avenue and Clackamas Street, LU07166143ASAD.
Council has before them findings. I need a motion to adopt the findings and uphold the appeal and overturn the hearings officer's decision to approve this application.
So move.
Hear a second?
Second.
Call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
No.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 10:30 time, sir.
Item 442, assess benefited properties for street improvements in the Northeast 135th Avenue and Prescott Court Local Improvement District.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mayor. This LID was initiated in 2005 at the request of business owners in the LID area. The condition of the street was very poor, and as Mayor Potter commented at the time, the potholes in the street were actually small lakes. When the business owners contacted Andrew, they told him that the street was not a good place for them to do business and that the poor condition of the street was driving customers away. The project, as envisioned, is also good for the Columbia Slough because we built a green street in this freight district, which has eliminated the problems with silt, mud, and erosion prior to this project. The property owners saved money by sharing the costs instead of doing the project themselves, and on top of the project came in significantly below budget, so the LID benefited all the property owners in the LID, including public storage. Andrew Abbey, LID administrator, is going to give us a brief presentation and make some findings for the record. Andrew will show slides and then request that Exhibit E be substituted to incorporate the objection to final assessment from public storage. No other property owners filed an objection to final assessment, as well as the subsequent withdrawal of the objection. Andrew.
Thank you, Commissioner Adams. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. Although the objection has been withdrawn, I would like to briefly make some additional findings. If we can switch to the presentation, this will be very brief. This is a map of the project. We improved the remaining unimproved portion of Northeast 135th Avenue and the remaining unimproved portion of Northeast Prescott Court. This is the type of usage that we see on the street. There's a concrete mixing operation on the street. You can imagine that truck going up and down the street. Street was obviously very difficult to maintain prior to the LID, and in fact, this is what Northeast 135th Avenue looked like when the property owners contacted me. This is what the street looks like today. It's a much better place to do business. Public storage has 700 feet of frontage along Northeast 135th Avenue that they no longer have to maintain. This is their other frontage along Northeast Prescott Court. They contacted me on July 28, 2004. I got a phone call from Jacob Shoden, who was the manager of that facility at the time. He told me that when customers pulled up to the front door, that's where they would park and think about renting a storage unit, and it was not a good place for them to do business. This is what their frontage looks like today. And then finally, what I wanted to show you, this is the egress from the LID area. So the LID area is shaded in brown. You can see the black street there in the middle is what we improved. Businesses in this area have two ways to get out. They can either go out Prescott Court to 138th, at which point they're trying to make a right turn across the Union Pacific Railroad to then go out to the traffic signal at 138th and Sandy. It frequently backs up, and it is difficult to have egress during the peak hours. Portland Office of Transportation is installing a new signal in the other direction at Northeast 122nd and Whitaker Way, so at no cost, by the way, to the property owners and the LID. So all of the businesses in this area will have much better egress out to 122nd and Whitaker Way than their current egress out to 138th and Prescott. And just to recap, we estimated a project cost of $518 per abutting linear foot. We were able to get economies of scale through construction by combining construction with a nearby project, and we wound up at $366 per foot. The property owners get those savings, which range from $12,000 to $106,000. Finally, I would just like to note that after we completed the project, I was contacted by Jim Glynn, who's the current manager of the facility, and he was telling me that they had dust all over everything before the street got improved. He said he was very happy with the street, and he couldn't believe the amount of improvement. So just wanted to note those findings for the record. In addition to substituting Exhibit E, I have one additional change to make, which is to substitute Exhibit D. It's an extremely minor change, but there is a delinquency on one of the accounts that we just need to note for the record for purposes of eventually financing the assessment. So I'll just go ahead and pass these out. And I would just like to ask the council to substitute Exhibit D, the final assessment worksheet, as well as Exhibit E. There is no change to the assessments. And we're substituting Exhibit E, as Commissioner Adams mentioned, to incorporate the objection to final assessment, but also note the subsequent withdrawal of that objection.
Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Call the vote. Oh, when you get back.
And I don't know if you want to open it up now for public testimony. I know that public storage canceled. There's travel plans to come up here from Southern California. I don't believe we have anybody else here to testify, though.
Okay, I think we're going to vote on that.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. How many folks have signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Did you say, I thought you said there was someone here.
We got the objection withdrawn by public storage, so they canceled their plan to come up and testify. Thank you.
I misunderstood.
Okay, it's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read item 466.
Authorize a grant to Jefferson High School for the Come Fly With Me coaching clinic.
Mr. Leonard, did you want to?
You mean Commissioner Adams? This,
excuse me, I'm sorry. Is it you?
This has right. Sam written all over it.
I'd ask Dr. Cynthia Harris and Mr. Mitchell be here shortly of Jefferson High School to talk about. Why don't we move on to the next item? We'll come back to this one. Yeah.
Okay. Please read item 467.
Increase taxi cab rates.
Revenue Bureau.
Mayor and Commissioners, I'm Sue Klobertantz, Revenue Bureau Director. I'm here today on behalf of the Private for Hire Transportation Board of Review, including both its company standing and driver standing committees. The purpose of this board, the Private for Hire Transportation Board, is to adopt and enforce regulations of private for hire transportation. So that consists of taxi cabs, sedans, shuttles, and specially attended transportation vehicles within the city of Portland. The ordinance before you today eliminates the 20 cents per mile fuel temporary surcharge and raises the regular meter rate from $2 to $2.30, an effective increase of 10 cents per mile, or 4.5% of the current rate with the surcharge. All other meter rates would remain the same. As you well know, all of us know, gas prices have gone up considerably since June of 2005, when the council established the current maximum meter rates for taxicab services of $2.50 for an initial charge and $2 per mile. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics indicates that gas prices in the last year have gone up by 50%, and since that last council action in 2005, gas prices have increased by over 100%. An increase in the maximum meter rate is required in order for taxi cab companies and drivers to meet their expenses and upgrade vehicles, thereby ensuring public safety. By way of background, we just recently received a rate study or meter cost study from the City of Los Angeles. And Portland, with this requested change, falls in the middle of lots of jurisdictions looking at raising their rates because of gas prices. For example, San Diego is currently at $2.80 per mile with a pending change to $3.10 per mile. LA is at $2.45 per mile. San Francisco is recommending a change to $2.50, up from $2.25. And Seattle has a $2 per mile charge with an additional dollar for $3 actually $2 per mile with an additional dollar per trip. And they are also currently looking at increasing their per mile costs. As I indicated, I'm here on behalf of the board and their members. I have four such folks here with me today, and I'm going to ask them to come and speak to you on this ordinance. I have Ray Miles from the Company Standing Committee, representative of Broadway Cab, Butch Miller, the chair of the Driver Standing Committee, also from Broadway Cab, Tessa Fay, and I'll let him tell you his last name, from Green Cab, and Steve Entler from Radio Cab. So if they would all come forward now.
Thank you for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. Anyone can begin.
Good morning. I'm Ray Miles, president of Broadway Cab and the former chair of the company standing committee. We first actually brought this motion to the Private for Hire Transportation Board of Review in November. And at that time, we felt that this increase was warranted. I would actually add that since that time, gas has gone up another 55 cents a gallon, and we're actually better than halfway to another 10 cent increase. So this is urgently needed. It's needed by the drivers. It's needed by the companies. And I would just encourage you to vote yes. Thank you.
My name is Steve Antler. I'm the general manager of Radio Cab Company, and I brought with me a letter that was recently sent by one of our drivers that kind of gives a brief snapshot of what's been going on over a past period of time and how he doesn't feel the fuel surcharges have kept pace with the expenses. And a lot of this suggestion for establishing a new baseline for the meter rates is really not based on fuel, but rather based on other things which blend in with the CPI. I also serve on the company standing committee, and we developed a formula for adjusting those, and it was suggested by City Council many years ago that we make small incremental changes, and pretty much that's what's happening right here, so that it doesn't have a sticker shock to the consumers and keeps pace with what's going on.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Butch Miller. I am the driver representative for the City of Portland on the Transportation Private for Hire Transportation Board of Review and chair of the Driver Standing Committee. The price of running a taxi cab is huge. The money I myself pay to the company for my insurance, for my dispatch, amounts to $560 a week. My price on fuel per week is now at $250 a week. My maintenance costs are averaging about $60 to $70 a week. Besides our responsibilities to the company, we have responsibilities to our families. And we need this increase to help pay for our families' upkeep. So I urge that this be passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Tasfai Alame. I'm the managing member of Green Cab. Well, I think all of the Bureau of Directors and the company standing committee, I'm a member of standing committee, have said that I think this is a time that we have to increase the fuel because the fuel cost has gone, you know, beyond our imagination. So most of the thing that the cost is covered by, you know, the drivers are taking care of all their expenses and everything. So I think it's time to get the rate increase so that, you know, some of the costs that are incurred can be a little bit, you know, recovered by the drivers. Everything has been said, and all of you know what, you know, the cost of fuel is. So I ask the council to adopt this or approve this request.
Thank you, folks.
Was the committee unanimous, the private transportation for hire?
Yes, sir.
I believe it was, yes.
Thanks.
Thank you. Is that it? Is anybody signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Commissioner Adams has to be here.
Yeah. Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? Well, we can get through the vote, and he can hopefully be here by then.
He has to be here to vote. It's an emergency ordinance.
And I know it, but perhaps we could just go ahead and call the votes, and by the time he gets in, he'll... I didn't know if anybody wanted to say anything, usually by the time he gets in.
Yeah, I was actually going to.
Okay, let's go ahead and call the vote.
Go ahead and call the roll.
Pardon?
Roll call?
Yes.
Leonard?
I did want to say a couple things. I had the Bureau of Licenses for my first 2 years here, and I enjoyed it immensely. And what I think I enjoyed more than anything was working with the cab companies and the drivers. I went to drivers' meetings. I rode with drivers. I actually got to know a couple of them and understood, I think, better the challenges our drivers have. They work exceedingly hard under exceedingly difficult circumstances. They work very long hours for not enough money. One of the things that I'm hoping the Bureau of License is continuing to do is the more aggressive enforcement approach that we took to make sure that the limousines are not pretending to be cabs, taking business away from the cabs. I hope that's continuing because that's something I believed very strongly in, that our cab drivers shouldn't have business unfairly taken from them by limousines that are pretending to be cabs out at the airport and at the major hotels. And we'd come a long way then, and I hope we haven't gone backwards. I would support this increase happily because, I'm glad that Steve said what he did because it isn't just for the cost of the fuel. I think our cab drivers need better compensation in spite of that, in addition to that, to help them with, meeting their family's needs. I mean, it's a very important service, and they should be treated fairly. So I'm very happy to support this. Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm too pleased to support this. I think we have some of the best cab companies around and some of the best drivers around, and this is definitely a cost of living adjustment that is necessary to help them support their families and make a profit. So pleased to vote aye.
Potter.
And after having spent some time in Washington, D.C., I agree completely with the commissioners. We've got some good folks here, and we appreciate what you do, and we want to support you, so I vote aye. Are we ready?
Yep.
Commissioner Adams?
Thank you, Mayor. The agenda item co-sponsored by Commissioners Leonard and Mayor Potter really is to honor the mayor's work of getting the city council out for a week at Jefferson. And as part of that and being principal for a day at Jefferson, I asked Principal Harris what we could do of a modest nature that might have some immediate but long-lasting benefit to Jefferson. And she caucused with her staff, and Mr. Whitehurst is going to talk about a program called Come Fly With Me that takes this modest sum of money and matches it with a lot of public and other private sector resources.
Okay. Before I introduce Mr. Whitehurst, I would just like to say thank you to you, Tom Potter, and to you, Sam Adams, Randy Leonard, and to Dan as well, and to all of the city officials. Jefferson will be changed forever because the city came to Jefferson. The environment has been elevated. And I'm sure you didn't help us win the state champion by yourself, but I think it was every little bit of goodness, and I'm sure that you provided some of that support that gave us just the edge. So I just want to say thank you to Tom, to Sam, and to all of the city. You too. Jane, you too. Everybody that came and became part of our family for a week, and it was encouraging and nurturing to me. It's not an easy job, but when you have people that love you, you can do it better. So we are improving Jefferson High School, and we hope to see the scores, attendance, and the discipline go up very, very soon. We're putting our discipline walls and data walls up right now. We're meeting with students in a few weeks, Tom. You're coming back. People want to know what happens after the mayor leaves. Well, a lot has happened. We brought 24 students with Donnie Adair to shadow. We met with city officials from Parks and Recs. We met with Sam, and we really have been what I would say partnering and to make a difference and making it better. So I say thank you, and Jefferson High School says thank you for the partnerships. We don't want to delay. You have a lengthy agenda, so we want to get in and out and get back to school. But one of our programs is a coaching clinic for the high school and the community. And Mitch Whitehurst, who is the dean and works with sports, is going to talk about that. Again, I hope you hear my heartfelt thank you to all the citizens of Portland. I feel so loved because you care about us so much. So thank you. Okay.
Thank you. And thank you again. We really appreciate your support from the city. And Come Fly With Me is the Coaches Clinic's name, and that's a motto that Dr. Harris started when she came to Jefferson. She said to the staff, you know, let's go, come fly with me. So we're using that title for our clinic. And basically it's coaching without X's and O's, inspiring youth to greatness. We see that there's a movement happening, and we want to affect the students in the school and outside the school, in the on the courts and the field as well. And with this is what we're trying to empower people in the community to just come and be a part. But, you know, there's a you watch matches, you watch events, and you see things happen. You see coaches, and we just want coaches to understand that we want them to step in and be a part of our community at Jefferson High School. And so we're trying to have a coaches clinic to motivate them and just talk about the ways that we would like students to be motivated on and off the court. We have a great list of people and speakers. You know, even Ernie Kent's going to be there for us, and I don't want to go over the whole topic, but Matt Hennessy is going to be the keynote speaker. And the evening before the Embassy Suites, we're going to have a dinner for the presenters and speakers. And so what we're trying to do is empower other coaches in the community to come and be a part of Jeff after this to, you know, coach our students and be a part of the community. So we really appreciate your support. And this just should be a wonderful event, April 26th at Portland Community College, which we're partnering with them because without the community, Portland Community College is, you know, they wouldn't be there. So we're trying to involve the community as well with Portland Community College. Thank you very, Thank very you. Much.
What questions would you have? You're so satisfied.
Are we going to get complaints from other PIL teams that we're supporting at?
Well, we're going to invite.
A basketball program that was two state championships?
No, we've invited everybody in the state, everybody in the Portland Public Schools personally, but you won't get complaints because we're just trying to spread everything because, you know, we're Portland, we're supporting each other, and so hopefully
we'll. You want to point out that I went to Grant, so this is going to be a really
We love Grant.
Tough vote.
We actually love Grant.
That's a new era. You're
Northeast Portland, we were just rooting for them as well. You know they're winners, right?
Yes, I do. We had them both here.
We appreciate Grant, the support you give us because we're following behind you. So,
Dr. Harris and Mitch, the thing that really impressed me when I was out there, I listened to what the coaches said before those young men and women's teams went off to play the championship. And mm-hmm. He was really using basketball as mm-hmm. a tool
yes.
to inculcate really positive values and mm-hmm. concepts of really accepting yourself. I mean, mm-hmm. I just thought it was just so impressive. And
yes.
he gave that in front of the entire student body.
Yes.
But he was talking to those particular players, but he was really talking to everybody. But,
mm-hmm.
So you folks really do a lot of things well, and it's not just about basketball or football. It's really about how we help our young people become successful people. And you folks, I think, have done a great job.
Thank you.
And especially thank you to Sam. You were there as principal for a day, and you've been following up with me, and I want to really let you know how appreciated that is. Thank you.
Is anybody else signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to address a specific issue? It's an emergency vote. Please call the vote.
Adams?
I want to thank and acknowledge Jane Ames for her work on this and Dr. Harris and Mr. Whitehurst for really the turnaround at Jefferson is underway. And also want to thank the mayor again for having us spend a week out there. It was great. Aye.
Leonard.
And it was as enriching for us to be out there as it was for you to have us. So we really appreciated the graciousness and the venue. It was a lot of fun. Aye.
Saltzman?
It was a lot of fun. Also learned a lot. Aye.
Potter?
I said my piece. Aye. Thank you. Say hi to the folks out there, the kids. Please read item 468.
Accept the report recommending transfer of Second Lieutenant Sharf U.S. Army Reserve Center to the Oregon Military Department for use by the Oregon Army National Guard and transmit 2nd Lieutenant Alfred Sharf, USARC, Reuse Master Plan to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and United States Department of Defense.
Folks.
Good morning. My name is David Shern. I'm an Associate Project Coordinator in the Housing Department at the Portland Development Commission. and I'm serving as the project manager for the reuse planning effort as part of the base realignment and closure process for the 2nd Lieutenant Alfred Scharf U.S. Army Reserve Center in Portsmouth neighborhood, as well as the Sergeant Jerome Sears U.S. Army Reserve Center in the Multnomah Village neighborhood. Today I'm coming before you to present the report that we've completed for the master reuse plan of the Scharf site. And so if we can go to the PowerPoint. Okay. The base realignment and closure process, which we affectionately term BRAC, is a federal process that is instituted to assist in the transfer of surplus military properties to within local jurisdictions. And as you can see on the slide, there are a large number of constituents involved in the process, including the U.S. Department of Defense, who is the property owner and makes the final determination as far as the transfer and disposition of the properties, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which reviews the plans to assess the ability of the local redevelopment authority, their assessment of homeless assistance uses and the reuse of the sites, the Portland City Council, who will today be approving the reuse plan. Portland Development Commission has served as what's called the local redevelopment authority. We were designated as the LRA by City Council in summer of 2006, and LRA is simply a fancy term of saying that we've been responsible for the due diligence work and composition of the master reuse plan. And as the LRA, PDC has been working closely with BHCD on the homeless assistance piece, and they've been a partner throughout the process. And the picture that you can see on the right is Fort Monroe, Virginia. It's just to give a bit of a perspective on the BRAC process. It's really a process that's best fitted for large sites, anywhere from 100 acres to 3,000, 30,000 acres. And so the sites that we're dealing with here in Portland, are two smaller sites. They're both, the Scharf site is around 5 acres and is located on North Chautauqua Boulevard, and the Sears site is approximately 4 acres located on Southwest Multnomah Boulevard. So as you can see, the scale that we're working with isn't quite the same as the Presidio in San Francisco or Lawson Air Force Base in Denver, but it's still the same process that we go through as far as evaluating the reuse for the properties. So this is just to show you the federal regulated steps that have been completed so far in the BRAC reuse planning process. The first step is that the U.S. Congress approves the sites to be closed. The second step is that the U.S. Department of Defense announces the surplus availability of the properties and makes available to other federal agencies the opportunity to apply for receipt of those properties. Because there were no federal agencies that were either applied for or were approved for transfer of these two Army Reserve sites, the Department of Defense came to the City of Portland and asked the City Commission, City Council, to recommend a local redevelopment authority to perform the city's due diligence and reuse planning as to the highest and best use for the sites in the city's perspective. And so we've completed that screening and outreach, as you can see in step four. And today we're before you with the redevelopment plan and the homeless assistance submission for your approval. Following approval and transmission of the plans will first go to HUD for their first review. They have a 60-day window to review the plans, and they are reviewing to see whether the LRA followed federal regulations as related to outreach to homeless assistance providers and consideration of homeless assistance uses in the reuse of the sites. Following there, if they approve the due diligence and the process that the LRA followed as according to federal statutes, the plans then are moved to the Department of Defense, and they use the plans to, in their deliberations on the final transfer method for the properties and the final end user. So the recommendation that we're making to you today is a land use recommendation. In our discussions with Department of Defense and with HUD, and looking at other BRAC plans from various other jurisdictions throughout the country. The primary authority that the city has in affecting the decisions made by the Department of Defense is the zoning authority and the zoning that's in the land use that is overlaid on the site. I'm sorry that I got done with that. So the three primary land use options that we considered for the site were, of course, residential. This site is currently zoned an R7 zone, which is a single-family detached residential zone. There's also the opportunity for doing an educational community use as well as continuing the non-conforming use that's currently on the site, which was determined to be an office industrial use. As part of the process, the very first step is that we were required to solicit what are called notices of interest from various local organizations, specifically homeless assistance agencies. So in the summer of 2006, we advertised in the Oregonian a solicitation for those notices of interest, as well as worked with the Coordinating Committee to End Homelessness and BHCD to identify homeless assistance providers and make sure that the notice of solicitation reached them. The deadline for receipt of those notices of interest was December of 2006, and so we received various notices of interest from different organizations. You can see that we received a notice of interest from Mount Olivet Baptist Church for use of the site as an expansion of their current campus, as well as consolidation of other uses they have spread out throughout the city, including use as the property as a school and community education center, use by the Oregon National Guard as office space, as well as vehicle storage and maintenance and training facilities for their service members. We received an application from the Portland Department of Transportation for use of the site for vehicle maintenance and emergency response. They subsequently withdrew their application for the Scharf site and focused their attention in application for the Sears site in Multnomah Village, as well as we received an application from Volunteers of America of Oregon for a proposal to use the site for mixed-income housing development with implementation of permanent supportive housing units for homeless individuals and families.
And just to be clear, it's the only site we're considering today is the one on Chautauqua, not the other BRAC site on Multnomah.
Correct. We will be coming back to you in late May with the reuse plan for the Sears site, as well as I've brought draft copies of the homeless assistance submission. It becomes a bit convoluted in this process, as you might imagine, but there's two documents that are required for submission. One is the actual reuse master plan, which you have before you, and the other is the homeless assistance submission, which is simply a documentation accounting to HUD of how we followed the process and included and solicited interest from homeless service organizations for proposals to reuse the site. And in our discussions with HUD Washington, they have advised us that we should submit one homeless assistance submission and not one for each separate site, simply because they look at the jurisdiction's continuum of care, which is the city of Portland, Gresham, and Multnomah County, and how these sites could potentially affect the continuum of care through reuse as a home in a homeless assistance manner. And so their perspective is that to look at both sites holistically rather than separately as it relates to potential use for homeless assistance. So I brought copies of the draft form of the homeless assistance submission if you'd like to see those. So the recommendation that we're coming to you, so the process that we went through involved a significant public participation. As I mentioned, we did the notice of interest solicitation in the summer of 2006. In December of 2006, we opened up the site for tours and informational sharing to all the various organizations that were interested. In September 2007 and October 2007, we held public open houses at the site for community members. We did direct mailings to notify them of those meetings, and as well as inform them of the meetings through our project webpage. Each of those meetings involved information on how the BRAC process works, the solicitations and notices of interest that we'd received back, and also the market and site analyses that we'd had completed. Finally, I worked closely with the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association to keep them informed of what's going on and spoke with them at one of their monthly meetings. The major factors that played into the decision regarding the recommended final use of the site included the evaluation of the site, the building conditions, the zoning, the environmental conditions, and the physical site needs. The building was actually just rehabbed and upgraded in 2002 with a $6 million upgrade by the Department of Defense, which include implementation of a new informational IT secure server system, as well as improvements to the maintenance garage and removal of asbestos and other property upgrades to the existing office structures. We also looked at neighborhood compatibility in our discussions with the neighborhood. Really, the people that live next door really had no complaints about the current use of the Army Reserve as it relates to vehicle noise or activities on the weekends related to trainings. The National Guard has informed us that their use would be even less intensive, and that the security restrictions that are currently on the site, including the Jersey barriers and the inability for the public to access the buildings without security clearance, would be waived with the National Guard, and the site would become much more of a community facility for use on non-peak hours. We also did a market analysis study, and that came back negative as far as any real options for office development or retail development. We looked at city policy, specifically the 10-year plan and homelessness, and the city's continuum of care, and we looked at the fiscal impact related to job loss from the transfer and potential economic development and mitigation of that job loss. And we also looked at, as I mentioned before, the homeless assistance piece and the solicitation of homeless assistance providers. Next. So finally, through all of this process and with those evaluation factors, we came to the recommendation that the site should be used with a continuing use of the office industrial zone. The current zone would remain residential and the non-conforming use would continue. This would restrict the National Guard's ability to expand or develop on the site. However, they've informed us that they really have no need to do so, as the $6 million renovation was done less than 5 years ago. And so there's really no conflicts of interest for them with the residential zone remaining on the site. The report also recommends that the property be transferred to the Oregon Military Department for use by the National Guard. And the distinction is that the recommendation to the Department of Defense is formally a recommendation of the use as a office industrial land use. And then within that, you can make a recommendation that who the end user should be, and the recommendation is as the National Guard. So it would be of the purview of the Department of Defense to approve the office industrial land use and then put it out for public auction for anyone that wanted to use the site for that type of use. Or they could take the City Council's recommendation of the end user being the National Guard and work through direct negotiations to transfer the property to the National Guard. Our basis for recommendations was the National Guard's notice of interest indicated that they have critical need for additional facilities in the Portland area. Their current facilities are in poor shape, and they are facing issues related to growing facility needs. It would be a turnkey use. There would be really minimal upgrade needed. They would take advantage of the $6 million upgrade, as well as we received support from many community members, as well as local, state, and federal elected officials for this use. So as I mentioned before, what would happen after this plan is approved is we'd go to HUD for their first review of the homeless assistance submission and the review of our documentation and the process that we followed, and then it would go to Department of Defense, and they would have the ability to, they're beholden by federal statute to approve the highest and best use, and their communication with us has been that this year they are primarily concerned with monetary return from the sales of surplus properties, but that they are also, through federal statute, beholden to consider public benefit in the community's perspective on what their sites should be used for.
That's it. Questions?
I have a question.
Is the Army National Guard here?
Mr. Salzman?
So I guess it's not clear to me how a property can remain residential and be transferred to another office industrial use. Does it have, is the current facility operating under a conditional use, or it doesn't have to worry about our land use?
In our discussions with the Planning Bureau, their analysis has been that if it's a non-conforming use, it can continue with a transfer of ownership as long as the property does not remain vacant for more than 3 years. So there would be really no issue with the transfer of the property from the Army Reserve to the National Guard.